Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to The Worker's Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor, right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher with the National Coalition of Labor, and here with me is Phil Davidson from the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council.
Good morning, Ed.
What's happening, Phil?
How are you, man?
I'm great. Happy Sunday to you.
Happy Sunday as well.
Listeners, you may notice that not present with us in the studio today is one Mr. Ken Edwards.
He's lost at sea.
I heard he's lost at sea. He's taking a little summer sabbatical, doing some fishing.
Yes.
Though usually he sends us pictures of these tiny little fish that he's catching. Never a big fish, but always very small fish.
Yeah, minnows.
I'm not even getting pictures this time.
Very curious.
We haven't heard much out of Ken, but I think he's not catching a lot of fish.
That's what I said. Maybe he's lost out there.
Yeah, he might just be bummed out.
Maybe he's starting his own pirate radio station.
Well, more on that as details become available, listeners. Yes. But Ken, if you're out there, we miss you. Come on back.
Send us an SOS.
Love to have you on the show. Or at least send us a picture of a fish.
Yeah, that'd be good too.
Prove that you're actually catching something. Ken says, it's fishing. It's not called catching. And maybe he's just living that out.
Very right true. Now. And yeah. Nothing AI generated. We'll know.
AI fish pictures.
Yeah.
I never thought about that. That's got to be a problem on like dating apps. Because guys love to do the fish pictures,
they do.
Which I understand women don't like at all. It's like the one.
It works against them.
Yeah, so maybe, just don't do the AI fish pictures. Don't do the fish pictures at all.
No.
Yeah, it's just not an appealing thing, apparently.
Except to prove that you're actually out there to you and I for verification.
Well, yeah, we want it, but yes, for totally different reasons.
Don't try to pick up dates that way.
All right, well, let's move right along from that, Phil.
Yes.
So ICE has been in the news a whole bunch. A
lot of ICE news, and they've just signed up their newest agent.
Who is that?
This guy needs no introduction. Dean Kane.
Who is that?
Okay, well, I guess he does need an introduction.
Who?
90s heartthrob Dean Kane of Lois and Clark fame.
Oh, he was the Superman guy.
Superman guy.
And now he's joining ICE as an ICE agent?
Yes.
Things are not going so well.
His acting career is going so well that he decided to join ICE.
There have been like 7 Supermen since Dean Kane, so apparently he didn't make much of an impression. I don't think he quit because of he felt like he was artistically done with the character. I think
I think it's safe to say that his phone is not ringing off the hook for upcoming roles.
Yeah.
And he's very proud of it. He just went on Fox and Friends, a couple other Fox News shows to talk about it and how much he loves the president and how he's providing service to his country by joining.
Dean Kane is worried that he's going to be on the Epstein list.
Very possibly.
There's a question mark there. I don't know. I'm not saying anything.
But this just goes to this whole concept, with ICE agents wearing masks and people trying to figure out, is this real or not? Is this is this someone who's just coming to kidnap me, who's taking advantage of the masked identity that's being afforded?
Ask the ICE agent to show you identification. But even if they are an ICE agent, they still won't show you identification.
But it just goes back to, imagine if you're someone and Dean Kane approached you and was like, yes, you're under arrest. I'd be like, Superman? Like, is this real? Are you acting in some B-grade Hallmark movie right now?
You should look up his IMDb and see what Dean Kane has got going on other than applying online for an ICE job.
Okay, upcoming roles.
I swear we're going to bring this back to workers' issues, folks.
Okay, he has a role in an Air Zoo Christmas. That sounds like a
Air Zoo Christmas?
That sounds like box office bonanza. Fugitive from Asteron.
That's like the thing that's on the TV in the nursing home that nobody can change the channel.
Oh, this is a good one. Pickleball Pandemonium, where he plays Stu Sunshine.
Pickleball Pandemonium. I mean, you got to strike while the iron's hot.
Exactly.
Pickleball Pandemonium. And,
guess who's in Pickleball Pandemonium with him? Kevin Sorbo.
Well,
they're back. The boys are back.
I guess they're kind of back. So when they're out rounding up legal documented immigrants and trying to ship them out, they'll be like, I recognize you. Well, I might be from Pickleball Pandemonium.
This is hilarious.
So Dean Cain, boy, are we excited to see you back in the news after really 30 that, long years.
He can really
nothing.
Use that 50 grand bonus right now, apparently.
So that's...
But no, this is about serving his country. Don't be cynical and think that he's doing it for the dough.
It's not for the cash. No. Well, but so the reason I brought up ICE, you know, getting back to that is they are doing an enormous recruitment effort where they're offering $50,000 bonuses
right.
To be, you know, quote, one of America's heroes.
Yes.
Make your family proud as one of America's heroes.
Because the ICE budget is about to explode, right?
Like, the ICE budget is going from $8 billion to $28 billion just
wow.
with the passage of the big, beautiful bill. And the
quadrupled.
The total ICE budget is going to be bigger than the military budgets of like all but 9 countries or something like that I was reading. But
wow.
So they're recruiting people. They want to bring in 10,000 new agents as soon as possible. They've lowered the age requirements to try to just get more people in. And they had a program that was reported this week where if you rounded up folks and got them deported within 7 days, it would be, you got a $200 cash bonus.
Wow.
So this had been going on for a while. The Washington Post got wind of it. And after they called and asked questions and said there was no such program, an email went out internally within ICE canceling the program. And ICE is now saying, like, that program never existed.
Never existed.
We don't know anything about that. But
so $200 per head they were offering.
You think about, like, teachers buy school supplies for needy students out of their own
out
salaries,
their pocket,
and
right.
ICE agents are getting $50,000 bonuses, and the age requirements and all the other requirements are going down, and you have folks who shouldn't be getting deported, not to over the border, but to countries like Rwanda. So anyhow, the administration's calling this a great job. I would be skeptical, folks. If Dean Cain is doing it, you can probably do better.
Right.
Sorry, Dean.
What's the vetting process? Because this just seems
sure.
like a recipe for disaster. You're going to have the Kyle Rittenhouses of the world saying, like, yes, I'm an armed agent now. They're not going to be trained for it. There's going to be very difficult situations where things are going to escalate very quickly.
There's a lot of reason for concern with this whole thing. But, you know, as a job, as a, hey, if you're looking for a great career, come join ICE, you know, do your own research, folks.
Yeah, you're basically a bounty hunter.
Pretty much,
yeah.
pretty much. It seems like when you're offering cash for people to cut corners and do things quickly,
yeah.
It's going to lead to some kind of problems with you know, adherence to proper protocol and
yes.
everything.
Yes, but so. Good luck to Dean Cain. We're all pulling for it.
I mean, I guess Florida yeah. wants to put 17-year-olds back in the fields picking tobacco. So if it's between
True.
Picking tobacco and ICE, then I'm just glad I'm not a 17-year-old looking for a job.
Yeah.
So
great career prospects right now.
Right on. Well, we've got to take a quick break. We've got a lot to get to today.
Yeah.
Tons been happening in the news over the past week. So stay with us, and we'll be back with more Workers Mike right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers Mike, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher here with Phil Davidson. Something that was in the news this week that I think union members are sort of appalled by on a continuing basis, and workers probably should be too.
Everyone should be appalled by.
There's been this push to eliminate union contracts for federal employees, you know, like the Treasury Department, the Veterans Administration is kind of the target here. It had been struck down. It went back to appeals
all
court.
Part of Project 2025,
yeah,
which we said was happening, and people said, no, nothing to see here. But
take it easy, Phil. We yeah. all believed you, Phil. I swear we all believed you. But this thing's been working its way through appeals court, and one appeals court said that they would allow for the elimination of these union contracts. As you know, the government had said, we're going to let all the appeals courts sort this out before we take any action. That was sort of the deal.
That was the arrangement.
And they did not hold up the deal at all because they immediately axed the contract for the Veterans Administration. That's the first one they went after, where they just removed the union contract for all these workers.
For 400,000 workers.
Well, yeah, and they said that the reason is because the union that represents the Veteran Administration, the AFGE is the union, American Federation of Government Employees, actively works against veterans' interests. Now, I'll say this. Almost 30% of the workforce at the VA is veterans. So if you strip 400,000 workers of their union rights, you've just taken rights away from, let's say, 120,000 veterans. You've just taken a union contract, workplace protections, you know, guaranteed leave, you know, proper termination policies, all that. All that's gone for 130,000 veterans, and you say that that was done to help veterans.
Right.
So this is the first...
So veterans are working against their own interests. Is what
if it,
the Trump administration is, you know, trying
as,
to claim.
As my mom always says, if something doesn't make sense, sometimes it's because it doesn't make sense.
Yes.
But yeah, this is happening with Veterans Administration. If you're a vet and you count on... So this is in the VA. So this is everything from nurses to administrative workers. So if you're a veteran, you're going to feel this. You know, the people who help you when you show up to the VA, to the hospital, to... You know, the mental health folks, like whoever, you're going to feel this, and the people that help you are going to as well. So this is going to be continuing across, you know, various different agencies, and it's a travesty. I mean, if you are a government worker, there are some folks out there who more and more just want to say that you do it because you're lazy or whatever. But, you know, these people serve... the public.
Yes.
The government's not, you know, they say the government's got to be run like a business, but it doesn't necessarily, because you have stakeholders who wouldn't be customers. You know, you have injured people and veterans, and, you know, especially in that population, that just have to be taken care of. And if it costs money to the government to do that, that's what the government is here for. It's a service to the citizens.
It's a very difficult job. And
yeah,
you need to recruit the best and the brightest to do that kind of work, you need to offer them good pay and good benefits.
At least, do we
really want people that are going to work for peanuts taking care of our veterans?
Well, I mean,
which is what apparently the administration wants. If they want to just rip up all these union contracts.
No matter what you do for work, if you are treated well, you'll be a better worker. If you're vilified by your employer and treated poorly, you're going to do not as good, you know, you're not going to work as well.
Exactly.
And these are the people who we count on to take care of our veterans, make sure that they are met by a smiling face of somebody that wants to help them out and, you know, go the extra mile for them. So if this is the first group of workers that's getting the axe on their representation, their workplace protections, it's just, I don't know.
It's all going to snowball.
You went for the Veterans Administration first.
Yeah, how can on one side of your mouth say that you support veterans and on the other actively take away their ability to have good salary and good benefits?
Yeah,
like that's what you're doing.
Well, it's rough.
Yeah.
This has been something that's coming for a couple of months now, working its way through the courts. If we think this is the last we'll see of it, it's not. If we think it's the worst we'll see of it, sadly,
no,
it's probably not.
And it's going to be the same playbook for every other federal agency.
Yeah. I mean, well, there are various agencies where this was pushed and it was held off in court. Now it's been given the green light to go ahead, and, you know, it's get ready for plenty more of this, and it's hard to watch.
Right.
Workers just losing the protections that you shouldn't be able to cancel a union contract halfway through it. But this is what's happening.
This is the country we live in now.
We'll continue to report on that. But I wanted to get into something a little bit more local. Down in St. Louis, like the Metro East area,
yes,
there are about 3,000 employees at Boeing who are just walked out on strike this week. And they are
the defense division,
right? So these are people who assemble F-15s and missile systems for Boeing Defense out of St. Louis. So
okay.
They've got facilities, and they draw from Missouri and Illinois. But yeah, 3,000 or 3,200 workers, right around there. And they were offered a contract from Boeing that would give them a 20% wage increase over 4 years.
Yes.
20% sounds like a big number. I was talking to John Hansen earlier this week about this on Worker Wednesday, and he said 20% sounds like a big number. And I said, well, over 4 years, you got 5%, and that's like inflation. So you're taking people who, there's more money getting pumped into defense. I don't think there's any listener out there who will say that defense contractors are not making outrageous amounts of money. Boeing last year,
Boeing's finances have rebounded significantly.
I mean, yes. On the defense side, there's you know what, you want to talk about blank checks.
Yes.
Nobody's getting blank checks except for maybe ICE and the Department
of
Defense.
Is our defense budget up to $1 trillion yet?
I'm not sure.
It's right there.
It's got to be pretty close. Yes. But so the people who work for Boeing assembling regular airplanes got roughly a 36% increase over 4 years last year. So they offered the folks who are making F-15s and missile systems half of that. So Boeing has said that they are going to use administrative employees and non-striking employees to continue operations as normal. What I kind of want to know about that is, are there going to be people assembling F-15s for the first time because of this? Because if so, I think you got to at least get back to the table and try to keep the right people building these things.
The union has all leverage here.
I mean, yeah, because I've talked, last week we had QSL, we had the striking members from the docks in here. And then I've talked in the past about, you know, when there was a quarry, like a gravel strike 3 years ago, about the workers went out on strike and they immediately had the office people out there loading trucks with gravel.
That's
right.
And on
the first day of that strike, there were 3 dump trucks that flipped over because the people who loaded the trucks just loaded one side, you know, it was too heavy. They made one turn and the truck just flipped over. So
I remember that.
There is an important thing to remember that, like, people who do their jobs, whatever it is you do,
who are trained,
you're better at it than someone who's never done it before.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there's extreme exceptions that are probably really funny, but no, I mean, generally speaking, if you do something, you're the person that should be doing it over someone who's never done it before. And when it involves building F-15s or building missile systems that we, you know, intend to use to defend ourselves or, you know, kill bad guys, let's have the right people.
Let's
doing
make sure
that.
We got people who are experienced doing that work. And you know what? It's democracy at work. The employees voted on it. They said,
right,
this isn't good enough. We'll come back to the table. I think I like their chances of getting a contract that they think is fair and just. And
yeah,
how can you argue with that?
Well, Boeing made the offer in negotiations, and the workers, or the union representatives, rejected it. So Boeing said, okay, we're going to give you a new offer. And it was the same exact offer. So that's what prompted the employees to vote it down and go out on strike. And that just started on Monday.
Yeah. And if 50% plus one voted for it, then the contract would be in effect.
Right.
It's just, you know, Boeing's got to come with a better number to go to the table with, and they'll have the support they need, and life will go on.
Yeah, and the average worker here, I think it's important to note, the average worker who is doing this for the machinist is making about $75,000 a year.
Okay.
So if you want to sit back and say you shouldn't be getting more than 5% or asking for more than 5% a year is greedy. These people are not getting rich.
Yeah.
And they have a very important job.
Very important
that
job.
I can't
right.
do, that you can't do. I mean, there's very little that I can do other than sit here and talk into a microphone. Like, if I have to, you know.
Eat while driving.
I'm not good at that either.
Oh, that's right.
I'm getting worse.
But you can do it.
I'm trying to stop.
Okay.
Because we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. What happens if you're in the car by yourself? You're in a hurry. You're eating something, and
it's
you
true.
Choke. You got to like pull over and wave your arms around, and
it's a dance with the devil.
I'm not prepared to do that, so I'm changing my lifestyle in some important ways. But we've got a couple more pieces of strike news. There's a really interesting one, a follow up on Fenway Park, who we had them on the air a couple weeks
ago. Yeah, things are ratcheting up over there in Beantown.
So we're going to touch base on that, but we've got to take a quick break. So we'll be back with more Workers' Mike right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mike, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic on 720 WGN. Phil Davidson here with Ed Maher. And when was it? 2 weeks ago, I believe we were talking about the strike at Fenway, and we had one of the representatives from Unite Here.
Yeah, we had the folks from Unite Here in Boston on the air.
Correct. And that strike at the time, they was starting to heat up. They had just went out.
They went out for three games against. These are the people who serve concessions and drinks and whatever at Fenway.
Yes.
They went out for a three-game series against the Dodgers.
Right, and they had a couple players from the Red Sox who are their reps from the MLBPA
right.
stand with them in solidarity, and which we don't see very often.
Yeah, and calling on the team's owner, John Henry, to help resolve the situation.
Correct.
So I think they were on strike against Aramark.
Aramark.
Aramark was the company that you know provides
one of the giant national vendors for stadiums and ballparks across the country. Correct, yeah. So what's the latest?
So they went back to work after 3 weeks, hoping that they had gotten their point across and that, you know, the company would at least return to the bargaining table. Not the case. Aramark didn't budge, didn't move, despite a lot of public support, because what I read was that concession sales were way down. So, but it wasn't enough. So they... they're preparing to go back on strike.
So they went back to work, but now they're going to go back on strike.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because whenever we see a strike, and it happens sometimes where somebody's like, we're planning a one-day strike for next Thursday, and if it's me looking at that, I'm like, okay, well, you're telling them when you're doing it, so they're just going to plan to have a lower workload.
Yeah, they can prepare.
Yeah, there's cases where it makes a lot of sense, like nurses.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, I mean, responsible nurses aren't going to just say, like, we're shutting the hospital down
because
they care about patients.
You need to backfill.
And to, you know, to some degree, teachers, and there are probably many other examples, but, you know, if nobody showed up to serve drinks that day, the fans are going to be upset. And, you know, maybe they won't be upset because they're not going to be spending $20 for, you know, a beer 10 times throughout the game.
True.
They might. Well, they'd probably realize that baseball is really boring if you're not drinking.
I wonder how many flasks have been snuck into Fenway Park.
I don't know. You'd have to, because I wonder if they're metal, and can you get them through metal detectors?
They make plastic ones now.
Okay, I was going to say you'd have like 3D printed flasks.
I heard about that. I've never done it myself. I wouldn't stoop so low as a sneak.
I can only imagine you in a ballpark with a flask just staggering around like, yelling at young people, slow down, slow down.
Again, this is just what I've heard from people.
You don't know anything about baseball.
I got my plastic flask on one hip. I got my stadium buddy on the other.
Now, imagine the bleachers at Wrigley Field, or at Raitt Field for that matter, was drinking liquor
instead of
old style and you know whatever they drink at Raitt
Field, MGD. That would be a dangerous situation.
Yeah.
Combustible.
I mean, it'd be interesting to watch, but the fallout might be more than we bargained.
That's why in those Premier League, they don't even serve beer, right?
That's right. I was in Italy a few years ago, and I went to a game, and you just get Sprite or Pepsi or Sprite, Coke, something like that.
That's
what you drink.
I went to a game in Portugal. They did serve non-alcoholic beer, but yeah, they know that if they start...
That'll just get everyone even angrier.
Yeah, true.
Like, oh, this is terrible. Start swinging.
I think I bought one thinking it was a beer. I was like, what is this swill?
But if you drink like 50 of them, something might happen.
Yeah.
There's only one way to find out, though, Phil.
It's true. we should test that theory.
Yeah.
But it's hilarious that over there... they're like, no, we can't. We can't add alcohol to this mix because it is too combustible.
No, like, I mean, when you've got like 50,000 fans wearing steel-toed boots, it's just like, please be good. Please. It's like when you take your kid to like a wedding. You're just like, listen, for like 2 hours, I just need you to behave yourself.
Yeah.
It's the same conversation, but just with grown men.
We're going the opposite direction. Because remember, college campuses used to be dry. And you couldn't drink at college football games, but now it seems like they all have bars there now. You can order beer, I think, at a lot of college stadiums.
Man, I'll tell you what, my college wasn't dry for football games.
Well, there's what's going on in the parking lot and for tailgating is a lot different. But inside the stadium, they used to not sell beer.
I never made it into the stadium.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happened in there. Football was played, I assume.
Yeah.
But you know.
Who cares?
Yeah, whatever. But
you're there for.
But anyhow, so these concession workers, remember that? We were talking about that. These concession workers make less than $17 an hour. So I can already hear a couple of listeners saying, Well, that's pretty good. It's if you're making $17 an hour on a job where you work, you know, maybe 3 days a week, you've got to have another job. You're, you know, the folks right. who do these jobs, we've talked to people
for
who
only
do this work.
80 days a year.
Yeah. Also. And we've had members of Unite here, Local One here in Chicago, who work this type of job at yeah. United Center. You know, they're relying on public transportation. These people are not living high on the hog by any stretch of the imagination. And if they sell, you know, 50 $20 beers in an hour and they're making $16 an hour, like it just doesn't, the Aramark is making a lot of money. Again,
correct.
As I said, selling a $2 beer for $20 and then you want to nickel and dime the people who are doing it for you. You know, it's just a weird business model. It seems like it's in need of a little bit of rebalancing. So
right. And all the tips are pooled now because I think, you know, back in the day it was all cash-based system. You know, yeah. if a beer was 15, you give a guy 20, he'd keep. But now people put on their card and that goes in the system. Then you got to split that with everyone. So I don't think they make a ton of money in tips like they used to.
Yeah. At some places, I've noticed some games that I've gone to over the last couple of years, if you use, because if it's cashless, you've got
everything's
use,
cashless
you've
now,
got
right?
to tap, you tap your phone, whatever, yeah. and you just tap through everything with your finger, and there's like an automatic 30%
gratuity. Oh, yeah, that's the first one that pops up.
And if you're doing it on like five beers for, you know, you're paying like $80, and you're going to pay like a $30 tip on a round
of
beers.
I know,
you know, I think that it would just be better if these folks were paid a little bit more fairly.
Agreed.
You know, because they are the people that make sporting events fun for Absolutely. A lot of people. Try going to a baseball game and drinking water and Diet Coke for an afternoon.
That would be a good experiment for our country. Yeah. To see how much would popularity wane if Americans couldn't drink at their sporting events.
Everybody says the same thing about baseball. It's like, well, you can learn to keep score.
Yeah.
Like, keep score.
No.
No, yeah, and I can eat like an O. Henry bar and chew bazooka gum.
Have some Cracker Jack,
yeah,
right?
What year do we think this is? But all that to say, we support these concession workers in Boston the same way that we do here in Chicago. You know, people shouldn't be living in poverty or earning, you know, poverty annual wages when they're out serving $18 beers to people.
Yeah, and so, it shouldn't take an iconic baseball team to shine a light on this.
Yeah, so Red Sox owner John Henry, we know I assume he's a listener. Mm-hmm. Most everybody is these
Of course,
days.
Yes.
So do the right thing, my man.
Yeah. Yeah. Snip this in the bud.
Yeah, we'll keep you posted on that. We'd love to have the folks from Unite here back on whenever there's something new, but keep an eye out because I think they're going back out on strike. So we'll keep you posted, everybody.
Yep.
You had something on Hormel of
Hormel
chili fame, if I'm not mistaken.
They do chili Dinty Moore?
I don't know. All those brands remind me of my childhood. Looking in the pantry at those were the cans that usually didn't move.
Yeah,
got tossed out every 5 years.
When I think Hormel, I just think gelatinous meat.
I think of The Jungle by Upton Sinclair. Yes. About the old, because I think that was Hormel, if I'm not mistaken. And if I'm
was
not,
it?
I think so, but I'm not going to be too certain on that. But, you know, that was the story of all the old slaughterhouses and meat processing facilities here on the South Side.
Yeah.
What are they up to over
so,
at Hormel?
So, they've made the news this week. This is not good PR. Mm-hmm. For Hormel. They allegedly stole paid sick leave benefits from their meatpacking workers. Never a good idea to steal your employees' benefits when you're, well, I think we looked up, they're a $12 billion annual revenue company.
I'll be honest with you. I feel like working in a slaughterhouse is a place where you're probably more likely to get sick than maybe some other jobs.
I think you can say that with assurance, yes.
Yeah.
That's a dangerous job. I mean, just the fumes alone.
I don't think anybody's growing up like, this is where I want to get a job.
Right.
But, you know, whatever. There's, as I always say, there's dignity in every job.
And we talk about this and how dangerous it is. I mean,
for sure. These people are doing hard work.
All that equipment. I mean, yeah, it's very easy to lose a finger and any other workplace hazards that go on in a meatpacking facility. But
and we're going to steal their sick pay.
Their sick pay,
their paid sick leave.
So Minnesota passed a law in 2024 that guaranteed sick pay leave for all employees. Mm-hmm. And the UFCW, Local 663 there for a plant in Austin, Minnesota, said that the company, for 14 months after that law went to effect, withheld these benefits from their employees and was basically pocketing and telling their employees that, hey, if you need to take a sick day, that's got to come out of your vacation fund or your PTO. So they weren't paying these benefits to these workers, and that is, again, this is a company that is Fortune 500 that everyone knows, the brand Hormel, mm-hmm. and to steal from your own employees who are doing this dangerous work that is just something that you, as we know, it's not a great job, but if you get paid decent benefits, which because they're provided you by the union,
yeah,
you could stomach it, and it's unconscionable what's going on. And
I wonder if you get free food to take home.
That's a health risk.
The old dented cans.
It's a health hazard.
I don't know. That's got to be one of the benefits. All right, well, we've got to take a quick break, but we'll be back to wrap up the show right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Workers' Mic on 720 WGN. We've got a few minutes left in the show, and a topic that is near and dear to both of us is what's happening with renewable energy in this country and how...
And the jobs that are associated with that.
That's what I was going to say, is this is something that employs a lot of members of both the Carpenters Union, the Operators Union, just tradespeople across the country.
Some of the biggest construction projects in the nation. I mean, I would argue that, you know, 6 months ago, a meaningful chunk of the construction that was coming up in the country was going to be going into, whether it's data farms or data centers or battery farms or wind farms or solar farms or whatever, enormous projects with giant price tags that employ a ton of people.
That were all receiving incentives from the CHIPS Act.
Right.
Now those have all been repealed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one thing to repeal those incentives, and, you know, Trump is so obsessed with fossil fuels and saying, okay, we're going to level the playing field. Mm-hmm. But now they're going even further now, where they're adding even more regulatory processes for wind and solar projects specifically.
Right.
Because Trump is so worried about birds, as you well know, with wind farms. He's very worried about and they say, like, that so, or wind farms account for like less than a tenth of a percent of aviation death or something.
We're not here to argue the danger of wind farms. You'd be shocked if you knew how many public meetings I've actually been to where they argue that building a highway is going to cut off the migratory pattern of a certain kind of bat, which is called the Iliana bat or dragonflies.
Oh, the
355
right.
extension. Like there's always something. And, you know, I don't know if you know this, Phil, I'm not a scientist. I'm not in any way qualified to even evaluate the arguments on this.
You're very convincing sometimes.
I can be.
Yeah.
I can be in short, you know, bursts.
In bursts, okay.
Yeah.
But anyways, Trump hates wind.
So what's the number of jobs that, you know, cutting off these incentives is going to...
660,000 construction jobs.
660,000 construction jobs. I mean, that's hundreds of thousands of people that would work, but now have to figure out something else.
Right. And some of these projects have already started.
Yeah.
So this would be ending projects where people they've planned their lives around this. This is, I mean, you know, when you're talking about a big solar or wind project, these are multi-year projects.
And frankly, the uncertainty that this has created is rubbing off on other projects too, because we had talked about that the data center that SanDisk, the hard drive company, was going to build in Michigan. And with the tariff stuff and all these, you know, the uncertainty with the different, you know, the different incentives, SanDisk said, okay, we're not going to build this. We've scrapped plans for this, and we're not building anything in the United States at this time. That one plant was valued at $66 billion or something like that. It was in the 60s. And, I mean, we're talking about 10,000 construction jobs just on that. And that's not even tied to, you know, a direct relation to this. But... For what reason? You know, like batteries are bad, solar's bad, wind is bad.
I think it just goes back to owning the libs.
Well, my question, and this is something that I've said to you before, and it's something that I would maybe just pose to people. If being anti-coal and anti-fossil fuel is woke, and then swing it all the way to the other side, and you're anti-solar, anti-wind, you're going to destroy jobs just because it's related to solar or wind. What is that? And my argument is that if you become anti-woke enough, and I'm not woke or anti-woke or whatever, I'm just an observer of the news. If you become anti-woke enough, I think you just become woke.
It comes all like, the way full circle.
Anti-woke
again.
Gets so bad that it just becomes the different kind of woke.
Yeah.
It's crazy to watch, though.
It's absolutely crazy to watch. And again, now the administration and just a philosophy from the Republican side of less government regulation, they're now introducing more regulation to penalize these companies. So we're speaking out of both sides of our mouth.
Yeah.
It's very hypocritical. It's like, let the markets determine what if energy companies want to utilize solar, if they want to utilize wind, if they think that's more cost effective, if they think it's better for the environment, which is certainly something that should go into your decision making.
If you're accusing the government of hypocrisy, Phil,
I know.
I mean, that's...
Hold on, let me clutch my pearls.
Neither side could ever be guilty of that.
Right. Like, but just let consumers, let the market decide where the resources are going to be spent. Now you're penalizing them to the point where, fine. If it's going to cost me more, if I'm going to get stuck sorting through bureaucratic red tape, then all right, fine. Maybe I will build less solar. Maybe this company says, all right, fine, we'll build a new coal-fired plant. It's costing a lot of jobs in the meantime, and for what? That's really the question here of who wins here, you know, other than...
I'm not sure.
Certainly not the workers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's this is something where, 15 years from now, when other countries are doing well, not relying on the costs, weird costs of fossil fuels, the unexpected cost of fossil fuels, are relying more on renewable energy and have price stability, we'll be like, oh man, they're so far ahead of us. How'd that happen?
Exactly.
You know, so... at least that's how I would guess it plays out. But I'm not right all the time. Not even right most of the time. Some would argue I'm not even right some of the time. That's what Ken would say probably. But Ken's not here.
You're better than some.
Yeah, yeah. We're doing like a midterm census, and our census has gone from 3 to 2. So
okay,
a lot of people are redistricting, so we're down to 2.
Gotcha.
So what Ken says, he's not here. No.
Not here to defend himself.
Yeah. We've only got a couple minutes left in the show. One thing I wanted to touch on before we wrap up is this was big news, just under a week ago. We didn't have a chance to report on this last week, but those unemployment numbers came in. Every month, the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Now, being from the union world, I'm very familiar with the Bureau of Labor Statistics because they track wage growth, unionization rates, unemployment, like all this stuff. And they put out reports, these big, thick data reports every month. So they did this.
I would say a very stable, non-controversial number that gets reported monthly.
Yeah. A lot of the people there who work there have got bow ties. These are not people who are like political hacks.
Correct.
The job numbers came out last week, and the unemployment rate or the job growth was less than they thought it was going to be. Jobs were still growing, but it was less. So the markets started to sense a little weakness. The markets went down, and the president said, I'm getting rid of this person for putting out these rigged numbers. Not even bad numbers. They're rigged numbers.
Because they corrected the numbers.
Right.
They initially showed better job growth in May and June, and then upon further review, they said, actually, it wasn't as strong as we initially anticipated, and they adjusted them. And once that happened, Trump said, this is fixed.
So they called it rigged, which makes me wonder, we were still creating jobs, so what happens when we actually start shedding jobs? But let me just say this, as with anything, if you got rid of the Fed chair... the next guy you bring in, nobody's going to believe anything they say. Whoever comes in from the BLS, if they bring in a new head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which they're supposed to, that first job report, if it turns out we created so many jobs, I think the markets are just going to look at that with skepticism.
Everyone is now. How are you supposed to trust anything now?
You could bring in the most trustworthy person to put out whatever numbers, completely legit, and everyone's going to be I'm not so sure about that. That's all the time we have for this week, so we're going to wrap it up, and we will be back next week. I think Ken's back next week.
Hopefully.
Let's hope, and hopefully he's got stories of all the enormous fish that he caught. But we will be back to find out right here along with you, listeners, next Sunday on The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Worker's Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of The Worker's Mic, visit WGNRadio.com.